Let Freedom Ring with Pastor Ron Tanarello.
This is Ron Tanarello, pastor, patriot, and fellow American. Thank you for tuning in to Let Freedom Ring today, and I hope you have been blessed by our previous messages. Doing the best we can to kind of remind you about what a great country you live in and why it's worth fighting for and why it's worth fighting to bring it back to what it was intended to be. Now, I think America is great. Don't misunderstand me. I run into people that come to this country from other countries in the world, and they come here with a hope. They think of us as the last major Christian nation. I met a girl from Africa, a woman from Africa, that was doing prayer, coming around here, praying for our president, and talking about how, from Africans' viewpoint, that this was the last hope for them that they could ever have freedom in some of their countries in Africa because of the turmoil there. And again, she came as a Christian and came to a Christian nation to pray for our president. I'll tell you the truth, my heart was really moved by that. I will remember it for a very long time. Well, what can we learn from the past? You know, a lot of us, we haven't really seen much. We have this woke generation now. Now we have a canceled culture. That canceled culture, so you understand it, is trying to wipe out every bit of our history. And if you understand this, what they want to do is, if you wipe out the history, then you want to create a new history in a new way. So let's think about it. Someone who claims sovereignty, when we talk about sovereignty, so someone who claims sovereignty expects his subjects to live in his realm on the terms that he has. Sovereignty, therefore, is inevitably connected to control. Who is the sovereign? The sovereign is in control. Now, the denial of one sovereign. Now, this is tough for us as Americans, but I want you to think about this. And this is true for all people. You know, sometimes you're only as free as the last decision that you made. For an example, you decide to take drugs and whatever it is that you're going to take, or you decide you're going to just drink. When you do either one of those two things, you make a decision. If you get hooked on those, addicted to them, now what happens is you're now controlled by them. You're no longer the one in control. Your last decision to take that shot, to take that drug, to take that drink, may be the last freedom that you have. So something is ruling over you, all of us. But let's take a look at this again. When you deny one sovereign, it assumes that you're going to have the sovereignty of another. So if God, who is sovereign, now understand this, a sovereign, in the case of God, it means that, he's in charge. What he says is true. What he says is good is good. What he says is bad is bad. Now, mind you, when we're talking about God, we're not necessarily talking about a church or a church denomination. We're talking about God himself and his word, period. So if God says this is good, it's good. If he says it's bad. End of story. And then he will judge accordingly. That's how God is. He's sovereign. And there's nothing you can do because the sovereign has power over you. The sovereign, as Jesus said about the man who he had built a house. He had such a great harvest that he came in, and most likely may have been even that it was a man that came into his dad's carpenter shop when he was a young boy. And he said, look, I've had all of these things that have come to me. I have so much. I'm going to tear down my barns. I'm going to build new barns. I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry. I'm all set for life. And he said, thou fool, this night thy life can be taken from you. And he said, don't fear the person that can kill you, literally, physically, but fear the one who, after you're dead, can throw you into hell's fire. So God is sovereign. He is the sovereign. So if you deny God as sovereign, it doesn't eliminate the reality of sovereignty. It's only transferred. You're putting somebody else in charge. You're making somebody else the sovereign over you. For example, when Jerusalem was plundered by Nebuchadnezzar's army, Nebuchadnezzar was determined to seize the Israelites' allegiance. He wanted them to work for him. So he took some young men, some of the better young men from amongst them, and he brought them to Babylon. And they entered the king's personal service. That's where he put them. Daniel, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. But let's take a look at them because that wasn't their names before. So they were brought to Babylon in his personal service. And that was to further his kingdom. In other words, he's going to use them to their wisdom to expand his own kingdom. So the first thing Nebuchadnezzar tried to change was their worldview. Let's look at this now. You might have been, a Jew. You might have been there in Israel. You might have thought that there's a Messiah coming, and one day you're going to rule and reign. But right now, let's get it straight. I'm the sovereign. And by the way, he was, as far as earthly sovereigns go or kings, he had absolute authority, total authority. He said, burn that piece of house down, kill that family, kill it. He could, whatever he said, they carried it out. That was it. No questions asked. He was most powerful sovereign that we know of as far as authority goes on the face of the earth. So he wants to change their worldview through government-controlled education. This is what he wanted to do. So he orders Asphazan, the chief of the officials, to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. So Ashpenazah is now given to them. He's going to educate them in their ways, the ways of the Chaldeans, the ways of the Medes, all right? So to symbolize the change in sovereignty, the Babylonians, they give them new names to the sons of Judah. The names of Daniel, Hananiah, and Mishael, and Azariah, they reflected the majesty and sovereignty of God of Israel. When you look at their names and you see these names had meanings, like Jedidiah, a beloved of the Lord. That's what that means. And Diah at the end, that's another name for God, beloved of the Lord or the Lord. So, for example, El is the term we use for that. El Shaddai, God Almighty. Okay. So, and God's personal name is Yah. Okay, so Daniel means God is my judge. Hananiah means that it can be rendered Jehovah has favored, or the Yahweh has favored. Mishael can translated who is what God is, and where there's no one like God. Who is what God is? That's the name of this guy, right? And Azariah means Jehovah has helped. So in each case, the Babylonian names that reflect the attributes of the Babylonian gods, Marduk, Nebo, were given to the quartet. Similar tactics have been followed by others equally repressive regimes. Throughout history, this happens. So, for example, in the Marxist worldview, as put forth by Karl Marx and implemented by Nikolai Lenin, who had aspirations of dominion, education had to be centralized. That's the first thing. The state would become the educator, the new parent. Lenin saw the value of monopolizing education, bringing it under the exclusive control of the state. He believed that time was on his side. He could do this in time. Eventually, he'd get it. Hitler believed the same thing. He believed that eventually he would be able to take over the kids and change the whole thinking. And with more time, he would have completely succeeded. I'm telling you, the way it's going, thank God that we had Christian people that stood up against him. We'll talk about that later. So the old order would have to pass away along with its outdated ideas regarding religion, family, and education. You notice that in this Black Lives Matter movement, one of the things that came out, they said that the nuclear family is a white person thing. Where do you get that? There were nuclear families in Africa, in the tribes, in the Indian tribes in this country. So suddenly now, this is no good because we believe in nuclear family. What's a nuclear family? Well, just think about this strange family, father, mother, and children. That is so crazy. What a crazy idea. Well, what's it supposed to be? You know, I mean, think about it. That family unit, that provides your first look at life and protection. It's a wonderful thing, the family that God created. And the family is not man's idea. It's God's idea. It created that from the beginning. So, again, you're going to have to change things. You're going to have to get rid of the old ideas, crush them, throw them out. That's what the cancel culture is about. Stamping out your history, stamping out your heritage, stamping out who you are as a people. And believe me, George Washington, I'm reading some of the things he wanted to do. He was so concerned initially. He said that when we became 13 states, no state was to make an allegiance with a foreign power. He wanted Americans to develop an American identity. We had all kinds of different people. Think about it. Pennsylvania was settled by the Dutch, New York by the Dutch initially, and then the English. New England by the English. You had Virginia by the English. You had different groups that came in from different places, but mostly from those two nations, and the French already had some things going on over here with the French Indian Wars coming down from Canada and had a foothold in America as well. So he wanted to make sure we had an American identity. We were our own people. And literally, I'm going to say something to you now. I don't want to blow your minds with this, but from a Christian standpoint, all right, let's take it first from a national standpoint. You know, the way it was intended to be, and it can be, is that America would be one people, one race of people. As a matter of fact, during World War II, at the Battle of Midway, it would be Winston Churchill that would write a letter to the American people. And he would say to them that you have shown yourself in this mighty endeavor. Because no way that we could have, I mean, it was an incredible victory, that we were a superior race. Now, I want you to hear that. He is looking at the American people as a race, okay? Now, if you look at the scripture, you have no male or female. Now, understand this. This is before Christ. You have no Jew. You have no Greek. What do we become? We become Christians, one people. One people who love God, who go by the same standards, the same ethics, the same morals, who seek to do the same thing, glory for God, seek to live out our life in a way that is pleasing to Him. That means we take care of our kids. That means we take care of our wife. We treat them. They say, well, you know, that's not reality there, Patriot Pastor Ron, or whatever you want to call me. Ron's just fine with me. But I want to say this to you. Life is so much better that way. When you have harmony in your home and things are run smoothly and there's fidelity and there's an effort to build the family and make life better for your kids than it was for you. You know, my dad and my mom were first generation Americans. They were born in this country and they were the first generation born here from their parents, from Italy, from Poland and Ukraine. And all I can say is that they raised us as Americans. They raised us up to see ourselves as, well, we didn't even think about it. We saluted the flag. We pledged, put our hand over our chest for the Pledge of Allegiance. We just were, you know, people and that were grateful to be in this country. My dad was grateful to have a job. He worked hard. He provided for his family. He did pretty darn well at the end, I'll say that. As a middle-class guy, smart, but wasn't afforded the formal education that he could have had for a number of reasons. Nevertheless, in the end, what we could say is we were Americans. My mom, I got to tell you, I didn't know anything about racism, but it would be in the 60s, maybe not even in the 60s, probably, yeah, in the early 60s or late 50s. We go to Fordham Hospital, and I've told the story before, but I'll tell it again. And I had injured my wrist, busted my wrist somehow. And so they took me to the hospital, and we're there, and there was a young black woman there, African American woman. Well, she was black. That's what we would, you know, that's who she was. And she had her son with her, was about 13, 14 years old, about the same age as me, maybe a little bit younger. And my mom saw her walking out dejected, and she stopped her and she said, "Where are you going?" And she looked at him and she said, "My son is hurt. You know, he's hurt his leg. He can hardly walk, and they won't treat him." She said, "Who said they wouldn't treat him?" And she said, "That doctor right over there." My mom went over to that doctor. She said, "You wait here," to this young black woman, a mom. And she went over there and she said to him, I could hear the conversation. I was right there. "You're not treating her because she's black. You're not treating her because you don't think she has insurance or money. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to report you. You treat that boy." And he looked at her. He was so shocked by her response that he grabbed that mom and immediately took their boy. And she just looked at my mom, just said, "Thank you." You know, that's the way I grew up. It wasn't a matter of race or color or anything else. I was always taught, look at people's character. What kind of a person are they? That's what's important. And you know, it's important then, it's important today. So we're back to what's happening in our country now. So why do I say these things? Because we have such division in our country. And we have an education system that seeks to divide us. We have political parties that seek to divide us on the basis of sex, male or female. Oh, you know, rights, female rights, women's rights, men's rights, etc. Tell that to Abigail Adams. I'm telling you, what an incredible mom she was. She is educating her own kids along with the dad. Look at what they did. And you tell me she didn't have an influence on this nation? I'll tell you what, she's probably one of the most influential women that you could ever meet. Okay, so she wasn't able to vote, but she didn't have to vote. She had her husband. And I'm going to tell you something. Any couple in a good marriage understands the influence that a wife has on a husband. It's a lot. So let's move on here. We're talking about what would happen with Marxism here in education. We're looking at lessons from the past. And what he believed was that he could take and get rid of all of the old stuff. And that was what we're talking about, the cancel culture, getting rid of the old and putting in the new. So the process for change, however, had to begin with the children. The sooner they could be taken from their parents, the sooner the reprogramming could take place. That's exactly what Marx did. Actually, I shouldn't say Marx. Yeah, Marx thought that. That was Marx's view. And it was, again, Nikolai Lenin that implements this. There's always a philosopher and there's an implementer, and boy, put two of them together and they're dangerous. So in the Principles of Communism, stated in 1847, Frederick Engels, he's an advocate of the education of all children as soon as they're old enough to dispense with maternal care in national institutions and in charge of the nation. To make it easier for parents to make the decision to turn the education of their children over to the state, they were offered free education for all children in public schools, as well as food. Food in school. Yeah, that's right. Food program, okay. That's not so bad, okay. Clothing and school supplies. We don't even get the school supplies, all right, at this point. So the state, of course, would assume all costs. These policies drastically changed the family and the social structure of the nation. How did it do that? Well, they were bringing women into the social economy, into legislation and government. That we're establishing communal kitchens, infant asylums, they call it, educational institutes of all kinds. In short, we are seriously carrying out the demand of our program for the transference of the economy and educational function of the separate households of society. In other words, they're not just learning in the household anymore. Now they're learning in school. And we've seen this in our own educational system in America. That's why you have Antifa. That's why you had Kent State back in the 60s. That's why you have Black Lives Matter. And, oh, by the way, Black Lives Matter, it's not a social justice movement. Don't fool yourself with that. It's a Marxist movement. That's what it is. And if Black Lives Matter, they'd be doing something completely different. And believe me, they just use these incidents to gain power and money from corporations that are feeding them and the millions of dollars that's being poured into them. So education was centralized under communism. That's what they did. The functions of the separate household were transferred to society, and mothers were encouraged to enter the workforce in greater numbers. This allowed the state to care for the children in educational institutions. Oh, interesting. Of all kinds. Propaganda was the order of the day. History was rewritten to serve the interests of the state, and competing educational institutions were shut down. Now, let me ask you a question right now. You have a president that's running, and one of the things that they want to run on and want to see is a school choice system, a place where parents can put their kids where they want to put them. Wouldn't it be great if we had if the state's going to be involved in education at all, that they come in and say, okay, we're going to give you X amount of dollars per student. Send your child wherever you want to send them. And you could have your kid go into whatever educational place you want. I think, I won't mention the town right now, but in New Hampshire, we're up to $18,000 per student. $18,000 per student. And they get nothing but brainwashed, believe me. They come out of there, and my two kids graduated from that and went to college. My first kid in college comes out of there, goes into math. He has to take remedial math for a year, remedial chemistry for a year. Could not be up to par on the education of those basic subjects that he would need for going into engineering. I'm just telling you, that's the way it works. So, and then you see here, kindergarten. Look at New Hampshire. New Hampshire had a private kindergarten system. It was great. You could take your kids and you didn't have to put them into school till they were 8 years old, literally. But that's the way the law was. So a mom, if you had a kid that wasn't ready, you could hold them off for a year and put them into a kind of kindergarten that wasn't academic. Or if you wanted a kid that was an academic program, you could choose that and get a great academic education for your children far in advance of what the public schools were able to do with phonics and just all of the basics in their behavior. How would I put it? Kids being able to sit down and read and learn. We had kids, we had a kindergarten, we had kids up to children, let's say, reading up to fourth grade level coming out of kindergarten. Well, that was only one or two. But generally speaking, way, way ahead. In fact, public school teachers began to put, some of the better ones began to put their kids into our school. Why? Because the system was out there and they wanted their kids to get a good start. And you got a great start at our school. Now, you got public education. But once they put it in, now they have to have it for the whole day. So now they've got the kids in, and boy, they push that through. If you could have seen how that was done, there was nothing that would be democratic about the process. And that's the thing. Once the fix is in with these folks, it's our way or the highway. This idea of tolerance, that's out the window once they are in authority and power. That goes, it's gone. There's no tolerance at all. There's only tolerance for one thing, and that is do it our way or no way at all. In other words, we have new sovereigns that are being raised up in our country right now. And you see, this is so against anti-Christian when you think about it. Christian viewpoint, worldview, really puts the onus on parents to be in control of the education of their children. I don't mean they have to homeschool them. By the way, these folks hate homeschool. They hate charter schools. They hate everything where you, the parent, have a say in your child's education. And they really don't like private schools. They can't do much about it right now. But once they get a hold on this, they will. And it's over. It's almost over now if we don't wake up and fight for this country. And let me tell you something. It's worth fighting for. It's got a good root. You know, I have a place down in Florida, and it's it's kind of a trailer park that was being redone. And people were taking some of these things and, you know, shaping them up and then selling them. And I remember one guy going, I said, why'd you pick this one? He said, it had good bones. The trailer had good bones. I could really work with it from here. And, you know, you think about it. America's got good bones. It's got a good heart, too. And the American people are a great people. They are an exceptional people. In spite of all the stuff you see going on, we can do it. We're a people that believe. We believe in God. We believe in ourselves. We believe that we can do whatever is in front of us. We take on challenges. We're not afraid of them. We don't need a president apologizing for us around the world. There's nothing to apologize for, America. You know, we've bailed Europe out of, what, two wars at the cost of, what, 400? Well, Europe and, of course, in Asia, that's almost 400,000. I was looking at that just the other day as they had that time of prayer at the World War II monument. And I looked at that, and there they were, 4,000 stars, each star representing 100 men or women that died, mostly men that died. There's a lot of blood in that. You had about the same amount in the Civil War. And I want to tell you something. We've had our problems, but we worked through them. But we were a good people, and we can be a good people again. No, don't buy into this nonsense of secularism. Learn from the past. Learn from the past. Learn what Hitler did. I wish I had time to go this, but I'll just say this. Adolf Hitler understood that by manipulating the minds of youth through education, he could implement his vision for a new world order, a secular millennial reign. That's what they wanted, that would rule according to the Nazi truth. Hitler would use the power of the state. That was his deal to accomplish his goals. All competing educational establishments would be eliminated. And in his book, Mein Kampf, Hitler stressed the importance of winning over and then training the youth in the service of a new national state. Hitler used education and the authority and power of the state to accomplish all that he sought out to do. And he knew by controlling the educational establishment, he could push through any worldview he desired. He believed that time was on his side. Once again, just like Marx, time was on his side to shape the minds of the young. And he understood the direction of the nation would be determined by the ideology of the younger generation. Here's what he said. When an opponent declares, I will not come over to your side, he said in a speech in November 6, 1933, I calmly say, your child belongs to us already. What are you? You will pass on. Your descendants, however, will stand in the new camp. In a short time, they will know nothing else but this new community. And on May 1st, 1937, Hitler declared, this new Reich will give its youth to no one, but will itself take youth and give youth its own education and its own upbringing. Well, that's lessons we can learn from the past, and there's some more. But I wanted to tell you, as parents, you need to be concerned. As young people, you need to think about what you've learned so far in some of these schools. What's true? What's not? Can you believe the press? You know you can't believe that. Fake news is a good term that our president came up with. I hope we can do better. May God bless you today. Thank you for watching, or rather listening to Let Freedom Ring.